The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, I thought last night's game was going to be good before it began, but the Miami Dolphins decided to not show up at all. I mean, shit, it was a horrendous night for the Miami Dolphins, just all around. Offense sucked, defense sucked, and the Buffalo Bills literally ran all over them. Well, in this game, Josh Allen did not need to do everything. He just needed to go out there and take care of business and have himself a solid game. It was all about running back James Cook. You know, I'm going to keep it real. With the Buffalo Bills over the last couple of seasons, the running back position has been a pretty big weakness for them. It hasn't helped them out at all offensively over the last couple of seasons. Well, it looks like James Cook is going to be that dude because he ended up coming right out the gate, scoring 3 touchdowns last night and just all around dominating the Miami Dolphins. Tua Tagovailoa threw for 3 terrible interceptions. Well, 2 of them were terrible. 1 was really, it bounced off his receiver, and you can't really do shit about that. But 2 of them were, you're like, ugh, what the hell kind of throw was that? And then, of course, I guess I should go back to the game, and then we'll get to Tua later. But then, the Buffalo Bills basically just completely demolished the Miami Dolphins last night, 31-10. It wasn't close, except for the first quarter. They traded a couple touchdowns, and then it was just all Bills all night. But, of course, the big thing that everybody's talking about is Tua Tagovailoa. Looks like he suffered another concussion last night. The Dolphins were in the red zone. He took off running, went head first, and ironically, Damar Hamlin, you know, the guy who had a heart attack on the field a couple seasons ago, he is the one who actually made the tackle on him. Not a bad tackle either. It's honestly, in my opinion, if I'm looking at it, this is all on Tua. He should have slid. But I mean, what the fuck? I'm not playing quarterback. I don't know what's going through his mind at that point in time. But unfortunately, and you could tell just as soon as he got hit, he was hit on the head, and then he kind of, you know, looked like he was not doing well. He wasn't like seizing or anything, but you could tell, oh shit, I'm kind of seeing stars or whatever. He was taken off the field, and then they announced he had a concussion. So we don't know what's going to happen there. One thing that I hate listening to is the day after shit like this happens. Of course, a couple years ago, Tua suffered numerous concussions in one season. He ended up missing the rest of the season afterward. So yes, he has a history of concussions. But it's really annoying how people want to tell him what to do with his own body. Tua Tagovailoa is a grown-ass man, and he should be able to choose what he wants to do. The rest of you people talking about he needs to retire, hey, you don't know shit. You literally know nothing about this dude's health, so suck the world's fattest fucking dick. It is so annoying to me how people treat concussions worse than any other injury. To me, it's like if you suffer debilitating back injuries for the rest of your life, did you know that's one of the top reasons why people commit suicide is chronic pain due to back injuries and neck injuries specifically? But chronic pain is one of the reasons why many people commit suicide. But you all want to just hone in on concussions and act like that's the only debilitating thing that these guys suffer through. I'm not saying I'm happy for Tua. I think it sucks for Tua that he suffered yet another concussion and has to hear all this bullshit. Instead, he doesn't get to, you know, heal and decide on his own. All the rest of you are going to fucking chit-chat and talk about how you know everything and you all know shit. You know fucking nothing. Let Tua do what he wants with his own motherfucking body. But anyways, Tua, you do what you want. My opinion is if you want to keep playing, that's on you. If you want to retire because of all the concussions you've had and just due to health, you can also do that as well. I'm going to let you decide what you want to do with your fucking body. But anyways, let's get to the rest of week 2. and see what we've got going on here. We've got, of course, my head-to-head picks with my homie Simon Ruvalcaba. We both had the Dolphins last night. We both thought the home team was going to win. We both had close ones. I had the Dolphins winning 24-17. He had them winning 26-24. So we have both started off the weekend 0-1 to begin. Now, last week, I kicked Simon's ass. I went 12-4. He went 7-9. So that's how we're looking after week one, but it is only week one. There is plenty of time for Simon to catch up to me and potentially finally beat me for once in this shit. But anyways, let's get to the games on Sunday, beginning with the Las Vegas Raiders at the Baltimore Ravens. Right now, the Ravens are an 8.5-point favorite, which does not surprise me. The Vegas Raiders look terrible. They don't really have a lot going on. Defensively, they look pretty solid, but I mean, offensively, it's like, what the fuck is going on here? The Ravens are coming off of that tough loss to the Kansas City Chiefs to start the season. So I kind of look at the Ravens starting off the season at home really hot. I feel like they're just going to be on fire all night, or I should say all day, since that's a day game. But I do have the Ravens just obliterating the Raiders 35-10. And Simon also has the Ravens obliterating the Raiders 27-14. Then we have the Los Angeles Chargers at the Carolina Panthers. Right now, the Chargers are a 3.5-point favorite. The Chargers showed a little bit of promise last week. You know, they got some help from the running back position. The receivers look pretty decent. They still obviously have some issues that they need to put together and work out and figure out an identity for this team. But so far, not a terrible first game for them. Panthers, on the other hand, looked like shit. They have a ways to go. But I don't think this is going to be like last week's game. I think they're actually going to, you know, make it a decent game, at least for the first half, we'll say. But I do have the Chargers winning this one 23-14 just because I feel like they are the better team. But I do think Carolina's going to look slightly better than they did last week. Simon, the Carolina Panthers fan, is going against his team this week. He's got the Chargers winning a close one 24-23. Then we have the New Orleans Saints at my Dallas Cowboys. Right now, the Cowboys are a 6.5-point favorite. They're coming off of an extremely complete game last week, and the Saints are also coming off of a complete game. So I feel like both of these teams are gonna kind of balance each other out. I don't really see this being like a runaway game for either team. But I do think the Cowboys are going to come out on top in this one 27-20. And Simon also has the Cowboys winning a close one 31-28. Then the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are at the Detroit Lions. Right now, the Lions are a 6.5-point favorite, which I got to say, I think is weird because I kind of waffled on this pick because for some reason, I'm getting this feeling like Tampa's going to go up to Detroit and win. I don't know why. I was not bold enough to go with the pick just because I'm like, Detroit is the better team between the two. I mean, Detroit's got solid defense, solid offense, good special teams. Tampa is lights out on offense, and then everything else, you're like, what's going on here? But I would not be shocked if Baker Mayfield makes this an interesting game. Now, I do think it's going to be a close battle, but I have the Lions winning 23-21, but I would not be surprised if Tampa walks away with the win in this one. And Simon also has Detroit winning a close one 23-20. Then we have the Indianapolis Colts at the Green Bay Packers. Right now, the Packers are a 5.5-point favorite, which kind of surprises me because Jordan Love is not going to be playing in this one. And once Love went down, I pretty much count this team out because their quarterback is Willis, who was a backup quarterback in Tennessee. Now he's a backup quarterback here in Green Bay. He hasn't really shown me that he's even a halfway decent quarterback at this point, so I have a lot of questions about the Green Bay offense until Jordan Love gets back. Meanwhile, the Indianapolis Colts, they actually looked really good on offense last week. Not too bad on defense either. I don't know what I'm getting from this Indianapolis Colts team. I don't want to say they're a contender or anything like that, but I am going with Indy in this matchup just because the Green Bay Packers are pretty much fucked, in my opinion, without Jordan Love. The Indianapolis Colts put together a solid game last week, even though they didn't get the win. They pushed them to the limit. That's for damn sure. So I kind of look at this one, and I think the Indianapolis Colts are going to go right up to Green Bay and get the win 20-10. And this is one disagreement between Simon and I. He still believes in the Packers without Jordan Love. He's got them winning a close one 27-20. Then we have the Cleveland Browns at the Jacksonville Jaguars. Right now, the Jaguars are a 2.5-point favorite. I think this is going to be a big game for the Jaguars. I think they're actually going to just come right out and obliterate the Cleveland Browns. The Browns did not look like a good team at all last week. There are many questions. Even their defense didn't look as stout as they normally do. And the Jacksonville offense is pretty potent if they want to be. So I actually think they are going to have a high-powered offense this week against the Cleveland Browns. And I've got the Jaguars winning 31-10. Simon also has the Jaguars winning big 23-9. Then we have the San Francisco 49ers at the Minnesota Vikings. Right now the Niners are a 7.5-point favorite. The Vikings, to me, they beat the shitty-ass Giants, so I don't really know what this team's all about, whereas the 49ers are still with the 49ers. They're stacked to the building with talent, and, you know, I just don't believe in the Vikings. There's nothing about the Vikings where I go, oh, yeah, this is going to be a good team. So I actually think the Niners are going to have a really easy day. I think they're going to kick the shit out of Minnesota 42-13. Simon also has the Niners, but in a much more lower, closer game than I do. He's got the Niners winning 27-23. Then we have the Seattle Seahawks at the New England Patriots. Right now, the Seahawks are a 3.5-point favorite. Both of these teams are very suspect to me. I think the Patriots kind of got a lucky win last week. And the Seahawks, I just don't know what kind of a team they are yet. I mean, yes, they did get a win last week, but there's still a lot of questions about them and what's going on with them. With that being said, I still think overall, from a roster standpoint, the Seattle Seahawks are a better team than the Patriots. I do think it's going to be a close game, but I have the Seahawks winning 20-18. And Simon also has the Seahawks winning a close one, 21-20. Then we have the New York Jets at the Tennessee Titans. Right now, the Jets are a 4.5-point favorite. They are coming off of a pretty bad loss to the 49ers last week. But I think they're going to put it together this week. I mean, the Titans are an awful team, so this is a great team to get it going against. I just kind of feel like Aaron Rodgers is going to come out on a mission. I mean, he had a good game last week, but I think he's just going to get better as the season progresses on. I think he's going to be playing pissed off, and I feel like he's just pretty much going to take over this game. And I've got the Jets winning 28-6, and Simon has the Jets also winning 34-20. Then we have the New York Giants at the Washington Commanders. Right now, the Commanders are a 3.5-point favorite. The Giants are terrible. I expected them to be a terrible team this year. There is nothing good about them. I feel like they are going to be struggling in each and every game that they play this year. Whereas Washington, they are technically a team in rebuilding mode, but I think they have a lot more promise, a lot more talent, and a lot more reliable players and reliability just in general going on with that team over the Giants. To me, the Giants are going to probably have one of the most, I mean, the last few seasons have been very, their seasons have been in such disarray over the last couple of years. It's like, how could it get worse for the Giants? But for some reason, I just kind of look at this season as the Giants are going to be a team I look at. They're going to be lucky if they get a win this season. So we'll see how it goes. Maybe they're going to be the first 0-17 team ever in the history of the league, because now we have every team plays 17 games rather than the 16. So if they lose, they could go for the all-time record, but I think they're going to be struggling all season. I definitely think they're going to look a little bit better this week, but I do have the Commanders winning a close one, 20-17. This is one of the few disagreements that Simon and I have this week. He is taking the Giants 23-17, so good on you there, Simon. Moving on to the afternoon games, we have the Los Angeles Rams at the Arizona Cardinals. Right now, the Rams are a 2.5-point favorite. The Cardinals are a team that you just don't know what you're going to get, whereas the Rams, they have Stafford. They've got Cooper Kupp. They've got Williams in the backfield. So they've got some guys on offense who are big playmakers. Still a lot of questions defensively because, you know, no Aaron Donald now. So what are we going to get with them? This is a division matchup. So I kind of look at this game as being, it's probably going to be a back and forth offensive battle, just touchdown for touchdown, just trading scores down the field, maybe potentially even go to overtime or something in this one. But I do have the Rams edging the Arizona Cardinals out 30-27. And Simon also has the Rams winning a close one, 28-20. Then we have the Pittsburgh Steelers at the Denver Broncos. Right now, the Steelers are a 3.5-point favorite. The Steelers' defense is stout. They've always been stout, and it's early in the season, so nobody's injured yet. And I expect them to pretty much dominate in this one. It's their offense, which is the problem. Their offense looked terrible, like it has the last, well, basically ever since Ben Roethlisberger retired, this offense hasn't been shit. So, yeah, I still think that's going to be the issue this year. I don't know who's playing at quarterback this week for them. Is it going to be Fields? Is it going to be Wilson? Does it fucking matter? I just think it's all about the defense with this team. And if their defense is able to just hold it down and make sure the other team doesn't score more points, then I feel like Steelers are going to get these ugly wins. And this one, I think, is going to be another ugly win like it was last week. I expect their defense to take over, have a really solid game, especially because they're going up against a rookie quarterback on the Denver Broncos and Bo Nix. He had a terrible week last week, so who knows what we're getting from him this week, but this Pittsburgh Steelers defense is not what you want to go up against for your second game of your NFL career. But hey, welcome to the NFL is what I have a feeling TJ Watt is going to be saying all day for the Pittsburgh Steelers. But I have the Steelers winning ugly this week, 16-7. And Simon also has the Pittsburgh Steelers winning 27-13. Then we have the Cincinnati Bengals at the Kansas City Chiefs. Right now, the Chiefs are a 4.5-point favorite. Usually, I get a bit more excited for this matchup because the Bengals have always played the Chiefs well. And hell, who knows? Maybe we will still get that same gritty matchup. But man, the Bengals looked bad last week. Now, we can all hope that was week one jitters, or was that what they really are going to be? I mean, because you got to look at it with the Bengals. Their running back position is different now. They don't have Mixon anymore. So is that going to be an issue? T. Higgins, he started off the season injured. Is this going to be an issue? Or was just last week them overlooking the Patriots and just coming out and having a shitty game and they're going to regroup and get it together this week? Now, I think they're going to regroup and get it together this week. But the Kansas City Chiefs looked pretty fucking good last week. I keep raving about Xavier Worthy, hook 'em horns motherfucker. He was a Texas Longhorn, so I always root for my Longhorns whenever they transfer into the NFL. And I thought Worthy was going to be a beast when he hit the NFL, and the Chiefs got a beast. And he showed in his first game what he's got. I don't expect him to, of course, do that in every game. But I don't know, man. The guy's a beast. And like I said, and it's not even just him. They've got depth at the receiver position now, and they're the defending champs. So, like, and they've got Patrick Mahomes. So, like, what are we going to do here? I mean, and they're at home. And like I said, I know the Bengals usually play them well. I think it's going to be a close matchup. I'm hoping for a close matchup. I really hope the Bengals don't suck as bad as they looked last week. I hope they do put it together this week. I do have the Chiefs winning, though, 24-23, simply because it looked like the Bengals might have some issues, whereas the Chiefs, I don't think, have a lot of issues. So I just am going with the Chiefs because I feel like they're the better team. They're at home. And until somebody proves otherwise, I can't pick against them right now. And Simon also is basically feeling the same as I am. As a matter of fact, he doesn't think it's going to be that close. He's got the Chiefs winning 35-20. So I hope he's wrong in the score because I wouldn't be shocked if it was that, though. The Bengals played like shit last week, but we'll see what we're getting from them this season because it is now only week two. And then the Sunday night football game, which, gotta say, don't have a lot of high hopes for this one. I feel like this is going to be a blowout. It is the Chicago Bears at the Houston Texans. Right now, the Texans are only a 3.5-point favorite. I feel like they should be like a double-digit favorite because the Texans are far and away the better team in this matchup. It's not even close in any way, shape, or form. Yes, the Texans got pushed to the brink last week, but that was against the Colts, their division fucking rival. If you are playing your division rival, it does not matter how shitty, it does not matter who's playing where, it does not matter what the circumstances are. It's usually a battle. You should never overlook a division opponent. And with the Texans last week, they played the way you're supposed to play against your division opponent. They took it to the brink. They were able to get the win in the end, but I don't think this one's going to be close at all. I feel like Stroud and this defense are going to go off, and I think it's going to look like a terrible game just overall for the Chicago Bears, because you look at their offense last week and it's like, ooh, that was terrible. Caleb Williams is a rookie. I expected the dude to have some growing pains throughout the entire season, and I feel like this is going to be a growing pains game for him as well. I feel like the Texans are going to be all over his ass, and I think CJ Stroud, every time he hits the field, is going to probably be getting his team in position to score some points. So I have the Texans smashing the Bears 41-13. And Simon also has the Texans winning, not as bad as I do, but he's got them winning 31-21. All right, so that is what we have going on Sunday and with the NFL. So let's move on to baseball and what happened this week and how the playoff picture is turning out. So we actually had some, you know, since it's the end of the season, now we are starting to see some records getting broken. And we actually had pretty much every day this week a record was broken or set at some point. So beginning on Monday, in a Pittsburgh Pirates win over the Miami Marlins, a 3-2 win, starting pitcher Skeens, man, this guy has been having a phenomenal year. I unfortunately have not been able to discuss him a lot just because, you know, the Pirates have not been good, and so I usually highlight pretty much the good things going on in the league. I don't cover every single thing, and so I haven't been able to discuss Skeens a lot because the Pirates suck. But he's been their only shining star on the season. He actually got his 151st strikeout on Monday night. That actually puts him as the most by any starting pitcher in Pittsburgh Pirates history. So that just goes to show you, he is living up to the reputation that he has come into the league with, and it's going to be interesting to see how the rest of this guy's career goes, because the Pittsburgh Pirates actually are well known for finding these gems. You know, Gerrit Cole actually used to be a Pittsburgh Pirate when he was drafted in the league, and he dominated over there. So the Pirates are well known for finding these pitchers, but then also well known for trading them away at some point. But until now, or up until then, Skeens is now with the Pirates, and he is dominating, and he now is the strikeout leader for the Pittsburgh Pirates by a rookie. Then on Tuesday, another record was broken in a 7-3 win by the San Diego Padres over the Seattle Mariners. Manny Machado became the San Diego Padres' all-time home run leader with 164 home runs, and he's only been with the team since 2019. So, yeah, the dude has been mashing home runs. He actually has 339 career home runs, but now he is the all-time home run leader for the San Diego Padres, and he hasn't even been there that long. So, congratulations to him. Then another record was broken that same night on Tuesday. The Philadelphia Phillies got a win over the Tampa Bay Rays, 9-4. Kyle Schwarber hit his 14th leadoff home run of the season, which is a Major League Baseball home run, or a Major League Baseball record. So Schwarber still doing his thing as well. I mean, the guy is just mashing home runs, and it's showing, and now he has broken a record. And then another record broken last night, unfortunately against my team, the San Francisco Giants. The Milwaukee Brewers got a win 3-0. Jackson Churio, their rookie phenom, hit his 20th home run of the season. Well, he has now become the youngest player to have 20 home runs and 20 stolen bases in a year. He's the youngest player to do it at 20 years old. So 20, man, the guy has 20s all over the place. But Jackson Churio, he has been phenomenal for the Brewers, and it shows with that record. So turning to the playoffs, because now we are officially about 2.5 weeks out from the beginning of the playoffs. So these next couple of weeks are going to be key for a couple of teams here. To me, I feel like it is what it is. What I'm going to, you know, it pretty much has been this since I want to say the last couple of weeks have pretty much been the same teams, and I feel like we're not going to have much change. I don't really see a team coming out of nowhere these next couple of weeks and really sneaking in. I think it's going to be who we're talking about today. So let's start off with the American League. Right now, the Yankees not only lead the American League East, but they would be the number one overall seed in the American League. Them and Baltimore, like I said, they're basically in the same boat right now. They are not playing great baseball, but they're not playing terrible baseball. But, you know, they're going back and forth with each other. Right now, the Yankees hold the lead over the Orioles by 2 games. Then the second place team right now in the American League goes to the Cleveland Guardians. They lead the American League Central over the Kansas City Royals by 4 games. And then the third place team right now leading the American League West, the Houston Astros maintain their lead, 4.5-game lead over the Seattle Mariners. Then the wild card right now is the Baltimore Orioles, the Kansas City Royals, and the Minnesota Twins, with the Detroit Tigers 3.5 games out, the Boston Red Sox 4.5 games out, and the Seattle Mariners 4.5 games out. To me, it's going to be probably either, you know, since the Yankees and the Orioles, they're going back and forth for the division. Whoever wins that division is getting the division, but the other team is going into the wild card. So I feel like the Yankees, the Orioles, for sure going to be that top spot for the wild card. Kansas City and Minnesota, while both of them, Kansas City's been on the downside right now, Minnesota doing their thing, but I don't really see those other teams. I mean, Detroit, meh. Yeah, Scoobles having a great year, but I mean, eh, I don't really see them sneaking in there. Boston, they've had their moments. Seattle, they've also had their moments, but overall, I think what we are looking at with the American League today is what we're going to be looking at once the playoffs begin. And then the National League, right now, the number one overall seed is the Philadelphia Phillies, yet again. They have the lead in the National League East division, an 8-game lead over the New York Mets. Then the second-place team right now in the National League is the Los Angeles Dodgers. They have a 5-game lead over the Arizona Diamondbacks in the West. And then the third-place team in the National League is the Milwaukee Brewers. They have a 9-game lead over the Chicago Cubs in the Central. So in my opinion, those are the division winners. I really don't see any three of those teams falling apart to lose their divisions. And then in the wild card, Arizona, San Diego, and the New York Mets are the wild card teams. Atlanta is 1 game out. And so I look at Atlanta, they could sneak in, especially, you know, Arizona, San Diego, the Mets, and Atlanta are basically playing the same type of baseball right now. They go up, they go down. They've got depth, but they've got injuries, and they're just not playing consistent baseball. So it's basically probably going to come down to the last day of baseball to decide this wild card matchup here. And then beyond the Braves, we've got the Chicago Cubs 5 games out and the St. Louis Cardinals 6 games out. I feel like those are real long shots to make the wild card, but might as well bring them up just on the off chance they make some little 2.5-week run here. But the National League, I feel like definitely the division winners, those are locked up. The wild card, it's just going to basically come down to these last 4 teams and who's able to put it together all the way to the bitter end. Now, we do have some big fights this weekend. Las Vegas is usually the fight capital of the world. Well, this weekend, it is 100% the fight capital of the world. First of all, we've got UFC 306. It is going to be at the Las Vegas Sphere. The first time a sporting event is going to be held in the Sphere. You know, ever since they opened that place, Dana White has said he wants to bring the UFC to the Sphere just because, I mean, the place looks dope as fuck. So I imagine watching a fight there is going to be pretty fucking awesome. But we have us a dope fucking matchup between some excellent fighters coming up this weekend. So UFC 306, we've got Sean O'Malley in his 18-1 record defending his bantamweight title against Mirab Divalishvili. I knew I was going to fuck up this guy's name. I tried like saying it, and it's just some of you motherfuckers have these last names, and I just can't do it, but that's what you get. But the guy's a beast. He's got a 17-4 record. I think he's going to give O'Malley a run for his money, but right now, O'Malley is probably one of the hottest UFC fighters right now. The guy's on a tear. He has fucking, like, hands that are bricks. I mean, this guy, when he knocks you out, he knocks you out. And it's crazy because he's not really a big guy. He's a pretty, especially compared to a lot of the guys he goes up against, he's kind of like a lanky-ass dude. But when he punches you, he will knock your ass out. Dvalishvili, he has been wanting this matchup for quite some time. So I definitely think he's going to, you know, give him a run for his money. And, you know, looking at body-wise, Dvalishvili is, like, built like a champ. Whereas, like I said, O'Malley's kind of gangly. But the dude packs a punch. And I expect him to pack a punch again. I feel like he's gonna defend his title. And I'm going to go ahead and go with the knockout in this one because that's just what the dude does. Then the women's flyweight is the co-main event. It's going to be the part three versus Alexa Grasso and her 16-3-1 record versus Valentina Shevchenko and her 23-4-1 record. So Grasso was able to get the belt from Shevchenko in the first matchup. Then in the second matchup, it was a draw, and it was a very controversial draw. But I mean, really, when I rewatched the fight, it was very close. And when it's that close, you know, that's just kind of how it goes. They know they kind of want a part three in this, so they ended in a tie, basically. And so we need part three to actually break this stupid ass tie. Shevchenko, to me, she's one of my favorite fighters. I love watching this bitch fight. She will knock a motherfucker out with her leg kicks, man. Oh, man, it's just crazy to watch. But Grasso, she's an excellent fighter, too. But I'm leaning towards Shevchenko. I think it left a bad taste in her mouth, how it turned out in the last fight. I think she feels like she should have just knocked the bitch out. And I think that's what she's going to do in this one. I think she's like, no, I'm going to prove that I'm the real champ in this one. And I've got Shevchenko winning by knockout as well. I'm going to go with the second round knockout. I didn't say what round for O'Malley. I'm going to go first round with O'Malley. I know that's crazy, but I'm going to go first round with O'Malley just because the dude's been knocking motherfuckers out like it ain't no thing. Speaking of knocking motherfuckers out, then we also have a big boxing fight coming up in Vegas as well. They're going to be at the T-Mobile Arena. So if you are in Vegas and you are looking for a fight, man, you got your choice. And so we've got my dude Canelo Alvarez bringing his 61-2-2 record up against Edgar Berlanga, who's 22-0, and he's a young dude too. So Canelo, he's definitely going to get tested in this one for sure. But, you know, I'm always going with my dude Canelo. The guy is a beast. I agree with what he said. His experience, I mean, 61-2-2. That is how many fights this guy has fought. That's why I love Alvarez. He is like a legit fighter to me because, you know, they don't fight, you know, back in the day of boxing, like boxing of old, like, some of the reason why, like, these Sugar Ray Robinsons and Muhammad Ali's, the reason why they have, like, so many fights is because they used to fight, like, regularly. In boxing today, sometimes dudes will only fight, like, once a year. Whereas Alvarez, he usually has two fights a year, sometimes three. He hasn't really done that lately, but I mean, that's what I like about Alvarez is he continues to fight like a fighter should. Not this. Oh, he did, unfortunately, make me almost vomit and say he would like to potentially go up against Conor McGregor in one of those fucking bullshit gimmicky fights. Please don't do that, Canelo. I get it. It would be a lot of money, but please don't do that. I mean, I know you would kick the shit out of him, but please don't do a gimmick fight. You are too good to do a gimmick fight. Like, you are good for boxing. You are, to me, he's the best boxer. But I mean, there's a lot of guys you could pick from. But to me, Canelo is just because of his experience and how many fights he has fought. He likes to fight. His life, you could tell, is boxing. You could tell he wants to be the best boxer out there. And he tends to fight the best as well. I know a lot of people question some of the people he has fought in the past. But I'm sorry, you could legitimately say that about all boxers, really. But to me, Canelo is the best right now in boxing. I don't know where he'd rank historically, but I definitely think he would be up there, especially when his career's over, whenever that is. But his experience, to me, is going to outweigh Berlanga in this one. He just seems ready for this one, and I've got Canelo winning. I don't know if he's got the knockout in him anymore. It's been a minute since Canelo's done that, so it's probably going to go the distance. And in that case, you know, I've always got Canelo in that one. All right, so moving on to my top 10 list this week. Still with the theme of my favorite players from my favorite teams. I've already done my favorite San Francisco Giants and my favorite Dallas Cowboys. So now let's move on to my top 10 favorite Lakers. This was another difficult list to make, except for one, of course. I pretty much always know my number one as soon as I start the list because they're my number one favorite players. But let's go ahead and start it off with number 10. He did... As I keep saying, with all these favorite teams lists, I'm only talking about the time they are with my favorite team. So with these Lakers, we are only talking about their time with their Lakers. And at number 10, my 10th favorite Laker is Gary Payton. He played point guard for the Lakers for a short period of time, to 2003 to 2004, which was unfortunate because, you know, he basically came to the Lakers because this was at the height of their dynasty, but unfortunately, it was also the height of the Kobe versus Shaq shit. And so basically, that really tore them apart from the inside, and they were never able to win a championship with Gary Payton. But I will say, Gary Payton, when he played those couple of years, he wasn't the Gary Payton that we're used to seeing, the glove, you know, one of the greatest point guards to ever do it. But he did his part. I mean, there were games where he was the only dude because Karl Malone pretty much was injured like his entire couple of seasons he was with the Lakers. And then also in this the 2003-2004 season, Kobe and Shaq, they had a couple of injuries. So even those guys were not in games. And so Gary Payton actually took over quite a few games and helped us get quite a few wins and get into the playoffs, even though he didn't have his typical Gary Payton type career. But to me, Gary Payton is one of the greatest to ever do it. One of the greatest point guards, hands fucking down. And so me, what I remember when he signed, I was like, hell yes, we finally have Gary Payton, because the dude was amazing, especially defensively. You know, even though it was a short time there, we didn't win a championship with him, I don't give a shit. I love Gary Payton, and he's definitely on my list of top 10 favorite Lakers. Then at number 9 on my top 10 favorite Lakers, Andrew Bynum played center for the Lakers from 2005 to 2012. He was one of the last high school to NBA guys, because, you know, now you have to go to college for at least 1 year. He is one of the last to actually come straight from high school into the NBA. He's actually technically one of the youngest players ever because he was drafted at 17 years old, and he played in a couple of games when he was 18. So, but he really didn't actually start getting going until about 3 seasons into his career. He started working right off the bat once the Lakers drafted him, because he was their number one pick that season. And he was highly sought after. A lot of people wanted Bynum, but what the Lakers did is they had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar come in, and he got to be his mentor. And I mean, what a mentor to fucking have. But with Bynum, unfortunately for him, a lot of injuries to his knees are what really killed the end of his career. But Bynum, what I liked about him is that he never, like, complained. You know, when you're coming out of high school, that means you're a highly touted guy. And he didn't come in and say, yo, I'm going to take over. He was like, I just want to be a piece. And he would just go to work. And it took, like I said, it took a few seasons for him to really get going as a good player. But as his career wore on, he became a huge centerpiece for the Lakers, and he had some big games. And unfortunately, in the 2 seasons where we won the NBA Finals in 2009 and 2010, he did get injured towards the end of both of them, so he really didn't get to show what he had as a dominating figure. But he did, when he did come in, he did what he had to do. But I loved Andrew Bynum. I loved that we got to see his career develop. I just thought he was he was a great piece for the Lakers, especially in certain games. He would just take over, and I just thought he was an all-around solid Laker and really enjoyed his career. Then at number 8 on my top 10 favorite Lakers, Robert Horry. He played forward for the Lakers from 1997 to 2003. He is a 7-time NBA champion. Now, obviously, he didn't win all of those with the Lakers, 3 of those with the Lakers. a couple with Houston, and then a couple with the Spurs. But the guy is one of the most consistent players ever. That's why he has 7 rings. You know, he's a role player. Robert Horry was not that. He's not a Kobe. He's not a Jordan. He's not a Steph Curry. He's not a LeBron. He's not the focal point of your team. But when you put Big Shot Bob in the game, you know he's giving it his all. You know he gets his hands on that ball. If it's any point in the time where it's time for a game winner, a buzzer beater, whatever the fuck, this guy's going to knock it down when it matters the most. And he did that for the Lakers. When he hit the game-winning shot in Game 4, 2002, Western Conference Finals versus the Sacramento Queens, this guy hit one of the biggest shots in Laker history ever. That's when I was like, oh, God, I love Robert Horry. I mean, I always loved him because, like I said, every time the dude came in the game, he was reliable. But Big Shot Bob, he would do that. And he did it in San Antonio, too. He did it in Houston. He was one of the most reliable players to ever play the game. That is why he is a 7-time NBA champion. Of course, teams overall, they do it. But he is an integral piece of every team he has ever been on. And he does that. Every team. And I loved his time with the Lakers. He was put in a game. He would make the big shot, but it was Game 4, 2002 Western Conference Finals against the Queens was when he had one of my favorite shots ever. Then at number 7 on my top 10 favorite Lakers, Anthony Davis. Currently plays center and power forward for the Lakers. He became a Laker in 2019. This is actually, now that I think about it, I think this is my first current player on either list. Because I usually, I like to let their careers develop, but I gotta say, I have loved Anthony Davis as a Laker since the day we traded for his ass. I always wanted there was rumblings that the Lakers were gonna trade for him. And, when it finally happened, it was like, fuck yeah. And basically, this guy's been such a focal point of this team, unless he's injured. And it just goes to show how important he is, because every time he's injured, we're not good. We don't do well. And in 2020, when we won that championship, I say this all the time. He should have won the MVP, the finals MVP, because he made some big, big, big shots and had some big, big games throughout the entirety of that playoff run, all the way through the finals. And he was the dude. He was who we went to. He was the leader. And I knew they were going to give it to LeBron because it's LeBron. And I'm not saying LeBron sucked. Of course, LeBron played a huge role as well. But I'm just saying, when Anthony Davis is healthy and in the game, he is the leader of this team. And I bet you LeBron would say the same thing. I feel like LeBron has been wanting to pass him the torch, but everybody wants to keep handing LeBron the torch back. And Anthony's standing there like, yo, I'm fucking Anthony Davis, y'all. I play excellent on defense. That's what I love about this guy. He's great defensively, offensively, in the paint. He is amazing. It just sucks when he gets injured, but that just is the name of the game. But I love Anthony Davis, and I'm thrilled he's a Laker, and I hope he stays a Laker for the rest of his career. Then at number 6 on my top 10 favorite Lakers, Ron Artest. I know he goes by a different name now, but I don't give a shit. He was Ron Artest when he played in the league. He was a forward with the Lakers from 2009 to 2013. I always loved Ron Artest. Even after him running into the stands and punching the fan, I'm just talking about his general game on the court. He is one of the best defenders that this league has ever seen. I mean, Ron Artest in his prime, he would lock it down. And he would lock it down against good-ass players. I mean, like LeBron players, like this guy, he would lock it down. And in that 2010 championship, he was a big part of that playoff run. He actually is basically one of the big reasons why we won Game 7 of that 2010 NBA championship, because he made some big three-point shots that we needed in the end. And Ron Artest, man, he also had one of my favorite moments after that 2010 NBA Finals in his post-game press conference. This is his first championship that he's ever won, so he's excited as fuck. But there's this one play where Kobe passes him the ball, and then he hits not the game-winning shot, but he hits a pivotal shot, we'll say. It's a shot that, because going down to the end, it was like a back and forth, and it was like whoever was getting these shots was getting the win. And Artest was a huge key role in this. And he goes, in his post-game press conference, he's like, oh my God, I see Kobe with the ball, and Kobe passes me the ball! Kobe passes me the ball! And I make the shot, and I go, woo! Like, it's one of my favorite moments ever, because you're just like, he sounds like a little kid, and that's what's so great about sports is because, I mean, that's what we all did when we were little kids. You're pretending that Kobe's passing you the ball, you got the game winner, and he got to do it in real life. So I loved me Ron Artest. Then at number five on my top 10 favorite Lakers. Now this is why I like the Lakers, is Magic Johnson. He, of course, played point guard from 1979 to 1991, made a brief comeback in 1996. Unfortunately, I feel like we definitely would have gotten some more years out of Magic, of course, had he not contracted the HIV virus. But and of course, I was born in 85, so I really only got a couple years of Magic Johnson, unfortunately. But that is why I like the Lakers. I used to watch Lakers games with my aunt. She was a Lakers fan, and she was a big Magic Johnson fan. And so basically ever since then, I was hooked. And so like I said, I only got a couple years of watching Magic, but he's why I like the Lakers. He had to make my list. I know most people, of course, wouldn't have him down this far below, but this isn't a GOAT list. This is just my favorite players. And obviously, since I didn't get to see the majority of his career, it's not like some of these other guys above him who have got a shit ton of memories of them winning championships and stuff. But Magic is obviously one of the greatest Lakers, one of the greatest players, and he is why I am a Laker fan. Then at number four on my top 10 favorite Lakers, Derek Fisher. Played point guard with the Lakers from 1996 to 2004, and this is one of the most reliable players we ever had. He was a part of this dynasty, and nobody really talks about him, but if you are a Laker fan, you know he was just as important as Kobe and Shaq was to this team. Just like Devin George, Luke Walton, there were a lot of guys in this dynasty that mattered. But Derek Fisher, I feel like, was the glue that held it together. I feel like he was the leader of the pack of this team. And he was so reliable. He would knock down game winners. The three-point shot to him was like it was nothing. And you just knew when he was in the game, we had a shot. And one of my favorite Derek Fisher moments was actually Game 5 of the Western Conference Semifinals versus the San Antonio Spurs, one of the most exciting games I've ever seen in my life. This is when the Spurs also were in their dynasty run with Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili. You got my Lakers, Shaq, Kobe, D-Fish. And the end of this game is just boom, boom, shot, shot. I remember Spurs get the ball back with 11 seconds left. Freaking Tim Duncan throws up this random three-pointer to take the fucking lead. The Lakers have 0.4 seconds left on the clock. There is no way they're making this shot. But you know for sure they're going to Kobe. That is all I'm saying. I remember watching this game. They're going to Kobe. They're going to Kobe. They're going to Kobe. They're going to Kobe. Whistle blows. Ball goes to Derek Fisher. Because everybody else is thinking exactly what I'm thinking. They're going to Kobe. They're going to Kobe. They're going to Kobe. No, they go to Fish, who shoots. The second he grabs the ball, it's like, boom, 0.4 seconds. Hits the game-winning shot, literally runs off the fucking court because it is one of the most amazing things ever done in basketball history. And that's just Derek Fisher, man. But man, I still remember that. Oh, it was such a great game. But Derek Fisher got the better of the San Antonio Spurs in Game 5 that night. Then at number three on my top 10 favorite Lakers, Pau Gasol. Played power forward and center from 2008 to 2014 with the Los Angeles Lakers. He was such a great Laker. The second we traded for him, we were good. We were finally a legit team. It's like we traded Shaq away, and we had this lull where we just were not that good. We were just always on the outskirts, and it's like Kobe's playing his heart out, scoring 81 fucking points. Are we ever going to be good again? And then we get Pau fucking Gasol, and we never look back. One of the most reliable Lakers. Fucking loved him. He was so huge for that run, that 2009 finals, that 2010 finals. And he was Kobe's right-hand man. Kobe probably trusted Powell more than anybody in his career. I would go out on a limb and say that. That he probably did, because if you know, if you're a Lakers fan and you watch Kobe play, you know he had his trust issues with other teammates. I don't think he had those issues with Pau Gasol ever. I think he always knew Pau was there, and Pau was there. I fucking love Pau Gasol. One thing I always loved to do is he would have this big, huge block, or just run down the lane and smash a fucking slam dunk in there. I would always go, "You have just been gasoled. You have been gasoled. You have been gasoled. You have all just been gasoled." Because he just would get this look on his face where it's like, "Ah, you have just been gasoled." I used to love fucking shouting that by myself, by the way. But yeah, loved me some Pau Gasol. Then at number two on my top 10 favorite Lakers, Shaquille O'Neal. Played center for the Lakers from 1996 to 2004. I mean, one of the most game-changing NBA players ever. One of the most dominating centers to ever do it. An MVP, just a game changer in all ways, shapes, and forms. It doesn't matter how it ended. He was a phenomenal player. And I feel like we got peak Shaq too. We got to see all, not even just the game winners, but it's like the dude would score 60 fucking points in some games. And just like, there would be times where it's like, who can stop him? I remember when Yao Ming came into the league and everybody's like, "Oh, it's going to be a battle for Shaq." Fuck no. Shaq made Yao Ming his bitch on so many fucking occasions. It's not even funny. Shaq was so fun to watch. Shaq, it just was fantastic, and he was actually what I would call the perfect Laker too, because he embraces the superstardom of it all and being famous. And you know, he also he likes to shake hands with fans, and I know this as a fact because I actually have met Shaq once. I was in LA. It was actually his last season with the Lakers, so this had to have been like 2004, 2003, I guess. And I'm at the Beverly Center, which is it's a mall in Beverly Hills, of course. And we're walking around, and I remember I'm walking out of Guess, and coming up the escalator is this big-ass motherfucker, and I go, "Oh my God, that's Shaq." And so my mom and I were walking out of Guess basically as the time he's getting off of the escalator, and we're walking right next to him. I'm like, "Oh my God, you are so awesome." And my mom hesitantly goes, can I get a picture of you with her?" And he goes, "No, you may not." And I go, Can I shake your hand?" And he's like, "Yes, you can." And he reaches out with his big ass fucking hand. I shake his hand, and my hand literally like disappears in his, because I'm 5'2", 105 pounds, and he is 7 foot tall and like 325. So yeah, that's a pretty interesting look there. But I mean, I obviously, you know, he was just dressed down, and really, honestly, I can see why he didn't want to take a picture with anybody. It was really fucking cool. And then when we were leaving, and we were waiting for our car, he was also waiting for his car too. And he was standing there. I didn't say anything to him, of course, but it's like, just like, whoa. But he was really cool. He was really nice. He did not give a shit that fans were at least wanting to shake his hand, because not only did he shake my hand, I was like one of the first people to spot him. But then I saw him elsewhere in the mall, I think at a jewelry store, and there were like five other people mobbing him. And he had a big smile on his face, shaking their hands as well, and just chit-chatting with them. So Shaq not only was an excellent basketball player, but I think he was the perfect Laker just to embrace being a dude who's playing for one of the biggest teams. He's playing for, I mean, he didn't play for Showtime Lakers, but I mean, the Lakers are Showtime. They are the fucking Lakers. And so he was the star of the team, and he embraced it, man. And like I said, I met him once, and it was a great experience for me. But at number one on my top 10 favorite Lakers, I think you all knew this. I think you all knew this. I mean, hello. Obviously, I've been doing my Jack Tatum intro since it's football season now, but you do know my other intro song is called Mamba Mentality. I've discussed my love for Kobe Bryant on here so much, I kind of feel like you had to have known number one is going to be Kobe Bryant, who was a lifetime Laker from 1996 to 2016. And you just, if you know me, you know I love Kobe. He is why. I mean, I I told you, Magic is why I love the Lakers. Kobe is why I love basketball. I have not enjoyed basketball since 2016. I still watch it, of course, but I have not enjoyed it in the same way that I used to when Kobe played. Kobe, even in the years where the Lakers sucked, Kobe was still worth watching. Kobe has so many moments. It's insane for me. I've already broken down so many different moments of him. It's like I don't know how many times I could do it. But yeah, Kobe is, I just loved watching him play. I loved his grit. I loved his tenacity. I loved that he thought he could literally take over a game. And it didn't matter how many times he would miss a shot, he would go right back up and throw that same fucking shot up. It didn't matter how shitty his teammates were around him. He still thought he was making a comeback. That's why he scored 81 points, because he's like, I can do this. I know I can fucking do this. I'm Kobe goddamn Bryant. So for me, Kobe is just basketball. I loved watching his entire career from start to finish, even in the bad years, even in the injury-riddled years, even in the end. There was not a bad time for me watching Kobe Bryant play basketball. I remember when it was Kobe versus Shaq. I was team Kobe. I will tell Shaq to his face. I was and am still team Kobe all day, all night, every single fucking day. Always, always, always. And I remember when it was those two, I was like, the Lakers better not get rid of Kobe. They got rid of Shaq. I was cool with it. Then there was those couple of times where he had those contract negotiations where it looked like he was going to be going somewhere else. I'm like, the Lakers better not get rid of Kobe. I'm going to be pissed off if they get rid of Kobe. Thankfully, they did not. Even in the end of his career, which was marred by injuries, and he wasn't the same Kobe, I did not give a shit how shitty the Lakers were. You do not get rid of Kobe Bryant. And I feel like the front office and the ownership always knew that, because Kobe is a Laker. He is a Laker for life. We could not have stood to see him in any other uniform other than a Los Angeles Lakers uniform. So Kobe is everything to me when it comes to basketball. And I kid you not, I have not enjoyed basketball as much as I did after his retirement. Because I just don't think anybody plays like him. I don't think anybody plays as hard as him. I don't think anybody cares as much as him. I don't think a lot of people will sacrifice as much as he did. And he was excellent to watch. I loved Kobe still to this day. And I don't think there's ever a player going to surpass him for me personally. So Kobe Bryant, number one, that should not be surprising to you at all. If you listen to the show or if you know me personally, cause I'm Kobe all day. I got two fucking Kobe tattoos on me. That just tells you right there. You get me Kobe Bryant, anything, it's going on my wall or my shelves or whatever the fuck. Kobe, Kobe, Kobe. All right, y'all. Enjoy this amazing weekend of sports, and I will talk to you fools on Monday.